Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
All right, Entree Architect community, welcome to the backstage area of Context and Clarity. Every Thursday afternoon on Context and Clarity Live, Catherine McPhail and I and our live audience talk with a special guest to search for clarity around the things that matter most to you, the architect, no matter what your context is. You may be the employee of a firm dreaming of doing your own thing, or maybe you've had a firm for a year or 10 years or 20 years, and you're starting to rethink or reimagine what that firm could or maybe even should be. Every week, we cover topics that fall under the broad umbrella of the business of architecture, and they're all the need-to-know topics for the success of architects just like you. If we've never met before, my name is Jeff Eccles, and what you're about to listen to is the audio recording of a conversation that my co-host, Catherine McPhail, and I had with a special guest. Or will it be guests from the Context and Clarity community? All of this to break down last week's Context and Clarity Live conversation. So thanks for joining us as we all share our biggest takeaways and look for ways to apply what we heard in the Context and Clarity Live conversation to our own businesses. Let's get into it. This episode of the Context and Clarity podcast is supported by Infratech. Bring indoor comfort to outdoor living with Infratech comfort heaters. Welcome to the backstage area of the Context and Clarity Studios. This week on Context and Clarity Live, Catherine McPhail and I talked to Patty Harris. She's an attorney and an entrepreneur and the founder and CEO of Licensure LLC. And we wanted to know what our audience thought about the conversation with Patty. So we've invited Christian Nielsen Palacios and Ken Crutcher to join us backstage. Christian is an architect, a spec writer, and a translator in Ithaca, New York. And Ken is an architect and educator with a mobile studio, I might add, and it's sometimes parked in Farmington near Detroit, Michigan. So Christian and Ken, welcome backstage.
Thanks for having us. Hello.
Glad that you're here. So for those of you out there in podcast land, as you listen to this, we just wrapped up the conversation with Patty Harris. Let me give a little bit of background, I guess, because maybe 6 weeks ago we talked to Zach Waters, who's a risk management professional. He's the founder of Black Swan Risk Management. We talked about insurance, E&O, and professional liability, general liability, all those things. And we realized in that conversation that we really needed to have a conversation with an attorney. So fast forward to today, we had Patty. There's a part of me that feels like the more we talk, the more worms come out of the can. There's a lot when we're talking about licensure and business entities, like we did with Patty today. There is a lot with all the 50 states, differences in the 50 states, different nuances and everything. So I'm really curious to hear what everybody took away from this conversation.
Well, when I was in school, I went to visit, and I forget the name of the firm now, but there's an architect's office, went on a tour. And this architect had a registration seal from every state, all 50 states. It was a huge wall. So he had a seal. He was registered in all 50 states.
Wow.
And I said, I want one of those. And now after hearing this conversation, I'm not so sure about that.
How many do you have at this point?
I just have one, but my plan was to get, if I have an opportunity to get one in another state under project, I'd get licensed and and good reciprocity and go after it. But I have any second thoughts about that now.
Same here. You introduced me as an architect, spec writer, and translator. And after today's conversation, maybe I'll just be a translator. Because, you know, this is so complex. It's ridiculous. You know, I'm dreading or worried about the fact that this is a federal country where we have 50 different options and requirements and they're not the same. And I'm wondering if that's one thing that maybe the AIA could lobby for, to have one set of regulations for all 50 states. But I'm not optimistic.
No. You know what you need to do? Just watch some movie on Netflix tonight. You'll forget all about it, and you just can go back to how happy you were this morning, Christian. I know how you feel. That's what I do. That's what I do when I think about the stressfulness of the legality of everything, because it is overwhelming. And one thing I got out of it is that I think I would really like to actually be a lawyer, because I love all those little rules and nuances and things like you can't do this in this state, but you can do that in that state. And so, you know, it is kind of interesting on that level.
Yeah. I need to rewatch some presentations that I think I mentioned in Clubhouse this morning. I am a member of SCIP, the SCIP, Specifications Consultants in Independent Practice. And their annual meeting was last week, and there were some very good presentations. And at least one of them, the presenters were lawyers, and they were talking about similar things. So I need to rewatch those too, because I know that there are spec writers out there who are not architects. Therefore, they're not design professionals, and they make a living. So I need to understand what the loopholes are in that sense.
I'd be interested in our organizations. If you could send me some information on that, I'd be interested in that. But the question I had was, you're talking about getting work in different states as an architect. I have my business card and it just says, you know, architect on it. Should it say Michigan architect? So if I hand it out to someone in a different state, it doesn't imply that I'm, you know, trying to go after work there, or that I'm trying to be an architect in that state.
Might be a safe thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, the example that Patty used relative to business cards was Nevada. And she said, hand the business card and Nevada's going to ding you. Now, one thought that popped into my head, which is similar to what you're saying, Ken, is if I had a business card that said architect and there was an address that was in downtown Chicago, let's say, and I was at a conference convention in Nevada and handed that to someone, surely Nevada does not conflate that. In my mind, that's a networking action at that point, but surely Nevada doesn't conflate that to being an offer, as Patty said. And I'm justifying that by the fact that the address is Chicago, not downtown Las Vegas or something like that. But I didn't ask that question. So.
Well, I asked a lot of questions.
That's another subtlety.
I suspect that I'm going to have to hire her for at least an hour or so to ask her all my questions. But one of them was, can I call myself an arquitecto, since I am also arquitecto? So, no. Or does the U.S. law forbid you from using every language's equivalent for the word architect?
My guess is yes. Right? Well, it sounds a lot like architect, so it's not like you need special Spanish skills to know what you're saying.
And I think the problem goes back to your initial point, Christian. It's federal, so there's 50 different versions. You know, what does Indiana say about architecto versus New York about architecto?
Architecto.
Here's a subtlety. I can't say architect if I'm in New York, but if I use the Webster's definition of architect, then I use that. So I'm not actually calling myself an architect, but the definition of an architect.
Well, does it matter where you're calling yourself this? Can you just be at a party, like at a cocktail party, and you say, what do you do? Oh, just don't ask. Don't ask what I do.
Can I call myself?
I can't talk about it.
Can I call myself a solutions architect?
Yeah, so there you go, Christian. You can call yourself an IT architect.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't even have to say IT. I say I'm a solutions architect. Mm. And that seems to be allowed. And then when they ask me what I do, I give solutions to other architects by, you know, reviewing their drawings and writing their specs.
Well, I don't think they're going to jump out of the woodwork at the moment when you say what you do. It will be later when you're doing it, I think. Right?
Yeah.
But so, you know, earlier, Christian, you had said that maybe you're just going to be a translator and forget. I think one of your questions was, if I give up my architect license, then can I do whatever I want? And we didn't really touch on that because that's what I'd like to know. Can we ever get out of it? Or are we all stuck forever? Yeah, we can't drop our architecture license.
If to offer, quote unquote, professional services, you have to be licensed. I think that means that if you're not licensed, your services are not professional. So is that a loophole too, you know?
But can you go back? I just like to know that.
It's like a scarlet letter. Yeah. Once you're licensed, you're always always scarred for life.
Well, yeah. I don't know, because I think Leslie Divol has asked similar questions. You know, she's not interested in doing all the whole range of architectural services, and she therefore let her license lapse. And apparently, if from what we're talking about here, that is moot action, because, you know, we all keep saying, well, to me, you're always going to be an architect. Well, we mean it as a compliment kind of thing. But if the state of Florida and North Carolina and California, she's always an architect, whether or not she has a license, you know, that's another interesting point.
Well, so the answer to that gets down to, I think it was one of the first things, when Patty was talking about setting these things up, she talked about looking at are you doing architecture, you know, according to this state, whatever this state is, are you doing, quote unquote, doing art? Yeah. And I think if I remember back to one of the conversations we had this week, Leslie talked about the research. She's obviously been digging into this. Especially in Florida, where and she has found out what she can and can't do as a now non-architect, you know, with an architect with a lapsed license. So she can't, you know, she said she can't do these things. She can't provide the professional services. But as Patty said, there are exempt things. Easiest example is probably residential. Working.
Well, that just doesn't clear anything up. It just doesn't clear anything up. Why am I registered here if I can do it here without having to be registered? If I can design houses here without being registered, why am I registered? And then if I get rid of my license, and that, what does that mean? I mean,
well, that goes back to the discussion that's been going, is ongoing, off and on discussion about license or not licensed to get licensed. Like I say, if you're not doing work that's not exempt in your state, why bother getting licensed? Yeah. But there's folks who are not licensed doing work that isn't exempt. You know, because you go work for a firm, you still can do the work. Mm. And I've actually just recently been approached for this third time this year, but being architect of record for a firm who wants to do work in Michigan, but they're not licensed. One was an out-of-state firm, so they just wanted to meet with a local architect. But another is a group from here that just they don't have a licensed partner in their firm, but they're going after commercial work. And now they're not licensed, but they're trying to do work basically on some competition with me, but want to hire me as architect of record, which they can because I am licensed.
But so, if you didn't say yes, they couldn't do the work.
Yeah.
And then you could do the work instead.
One of my professors a long time ago told me, when talking about getting, because that was one of the things when I started my office, I wasn't licensed. And I started doing work, but I did research to find out what was exempt and what I could actually do. And that's what I did. But one of the things I told him was, if I was going to do a larger project or something, I need to have a licensed architect working for me. I'd hire someone or work with someone or partner with someone who was licensed to do the project. And he brought up a good point that, because when you're starting to do that, charging for it, you don't want to do it for less money or less money than you would make doing it, because you don't want to try to make it cost effective for someone to hire a non-licensed person who's going to hire or just work with someone who's licensed, as opposed to just hiring a licensed person for the same fee or for more fee. So make it a point that, you know, whatever I'll be architect of record, but it can't be cost effective. So yes, I'm going to charge just like I would be if I was the architect. So now your fee as an unlicensed partner should be higher than mine if I wasn't. That's just, it just doesn't make sense to not do it that way.
Yeah.
But then to answer your question, like, you're talking about whether you want to get licensed or not, that is a reason to get licensed. Because in your state, in Michigan, there's an exemption for single family houses under 3,500 square feet. And I've run into some people who are trying to do houses that start keeping, you know, the big mansions start getting into that range where, you know, 3,350 square feet, you don't have to get licensed. You add one more bedroom and now you have to be licensed to do the house.
Hmm. Well, and you made a really great point too, just a second ago, where you're saying that, you know, pick what's a big firm in Detroit? The Smith Group up there?
Smith Group. They're everywhere.
Yeah. So in Detroit at Smith Group, there are unlicensed people working there that are doing the same work as licensed architect. And that's okay. Right? I mean, that's their job. It's being overseen by, you know, so theoretically by someone else, and they're not going to be stamping it. The design partner, whoever is in charge of stamping it for that particular office, is going to do it. And it just really feels like the more words that come out of our mouths when we talk about this, the bigger the can of worms gets.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much nuance.
Yeah, I used to work for a firm that had offices all over New York State and New Jersey and Delaware. And I know I did work for projects in New Jersey and Delaware, and I was already licensed. So did I break the law? Did they break the law? I have no idea.
In what way break the law?
In the sense that I was practicing in a state where I'm not licensed.
Oh, I see.
I was practicing, you know, from Ithaca, New York, but I was doing projects or involved in projects anyway in Delaware and New Jersey. Mm-hmm. But it was all done under the umbrella of the big firm, and the partner in charge was licensed in those states, and he would be the one stamping and signing the drawings.
Yeah, so I don't think so.
It seemed like the distinction is if you're the architect of record or the architect or professional in the responsible charge, mm-hmm. that's the person that needs to be licensed in that state. And if you're working under or for or with them, as long as that's the person in charge.
That's kind of what I thought. But then Tim Dearborn posted an excerpt from California about what you need a license for. And it said to offer or perform or be in control of a bunch of things. And that included specifications in there. Mm-hmm. And those ors bother me because, I'm not in control. I'm not in responsible charge of the thing, but I am offering and performing. So of the three things that I'm not supposed to do, I'm doing two.
But technically, you're not doing the spec. The person that hired you is doing the spec. You're doing the spec for them.
Well, that's what I want to hear, but I don't think that's what the text says.
Yeah.
Well, your interpretation is the one I want, but, you know, a strict reading of the text scares me.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Jeff. Well, I was just going to say that when people post on Entree Architect about, well, in California or New Jersey, you can do this or that. It's different, like she said, in every single state. And so just because they're saying that in California, maybe if you have clients that would be, let's say, in Michigan and it looks like Arkansas you want to stay away from, but that you could just find out which states you actually can work in, because I'm sure, or do the specification consulting, really, is what you're doing, or are you writing them the specs?
In some cases, I am, yeah.
Well, so, I mean, I think it's just a matter, I understand that you're discouraged, but I think it's just a matter of seeing which states you can work
in. Well, it's not so much discouraged as scared. I want to,
I guess it's
be out of trouble.
Yeah.
Which is also the reason many of us.
Well, I think it's a matter of who's hiring you to do the spec
well, other architects or other specifiers. Other architects or specifiers are the ones hiring me, but again, and also I just wanted to be protected, and that's also why I incorporated as an LLC, which apparently is the wrong type of entity for New York State. And I know there's several anti-architect members in New York State who are LLCs. So are we all wrong?
Did that come down to, did I catch that there's a difference between whether you're a sole proprietor or, you know, a larger entity on the LLC discussion? That I didn't, I'm not sure I quite understood everything that that Patty was saying about that, but the, as a sole proprietor, that's not a, that's not a business entity. And of course, she did say that your insurance is the part that takes the takes the personal liability away from you.
Yeah, but so thus was my incorporation an exercise in futility? Was I just fine not doing it?
Well, you know,
I think the point, I thought the point was that you're having an LLC or PC or incorporation was just protecting you personally with, from business liabilities by having the shield or being contained by a separate business entity. That's the difference, I think. And, but some, and I, it, it seems like, I guess it's different in every state, but your professional liability is different than a corporate liability. And that's something that, you know, that goes through the corporate protection.
But in my case and that of many other listeners, we are just us. So therefore, like the LLP that she mentioned, which is limited liability partnership, doesn't make at least grammatical sense, because to be in a partnership, that means there's at least two people.
Yeah, I think you have to have two people in that.
And I don't have a partner, and I don't want a partner. But she also had that fantastic sentence that is almost meme-worthy. Yeah. How was it that it
negligence pierces the corporate veil?
Yeah.
Which I put on the screen for a little while. I hope everyone saw that.
I saw it.
Pretty disturbing. Yeah. Well, but
I'm thinking if I ever get a tattoo, it's going to be that.
Yeah.
Oh, Christian, you have to get a tattoo that says that. I was going to write it on my monitor just so I could look at it every day. But that's where the liability insurance comes in, though, in terms of being scared of whatever. I mean, I guess just thinking, well, what could happen? Well,
my screensaver says I have to keep reminding myself that I'm an adult and will be charged as one.
Wow. Is that what your screensaver says? This is cheery topic.
Yes.
That's probably the computer that the kids used to use.
Yeah.
Catherine, you said you wanted to be a lawyer, and I do. I just don't feel that I have the, neither the time nor the finances to pursue that, you know, but, I've always been fascinated by all these legal aspects of our profession and the construction world. And, that's why I pay so much importance to the front end and the contracts and stuff.
In the last few years, premium outdoor spaces have become a must-have architectural feature. And Infratech outdoor electric heating systems have become the brand of choice among leading architects. Infratech heaters provide energy-efficient, ambient warmth that allows homeowners to live outdoors during the cooler months. Clients love them because they can enjoy up to 100 more nights a year outside. Architects love them because of their unparalleled versatility, from heater capacities and colors to mounting options that can either seamlessly disappear or accentuate a space with beautiful decorative coverings. They're also the only Comfort Heat company to offer smart home integration and hands-free voice-activated control. For over 60 years, Infratech has made their products in the United States at competitive prices. They offer incredible design and live technical support at every stage of the job. Infratech is specified at the world's most prestigious properties. Learn why and sign up for a free consultation at infratech-usa.com/podcast. You know, where I live in Indianapolis, fall is a beautiful time of year. Right now, the leaves are orange and yellow, and there's a wonderful Christmas in the air. But let's be honest, as beautiful as it is, sitting on the porch and shivering as I watch the neighborhood go by starts to lose its appeal. I guess it's time to consider an Infratech heating system so that I can sit outside at least until all of the leaves have fallen.
I also like that thing about the "it depends." I mentioned in Clubhouse this morning, but I want to repeat it here for posterity, that one of those SCIP lecturers was saying that his advice to all law students is that throughout their 3 years of school, every answer to every exam has to begin with the words "it depends," and they will end up at the top of their class.
That bothers me a little bit.
Well, you know, Chris, that's true, but it depends on.
She did.
That's how she answered.
She did answer.
One thing I was take away from this.
Go ahead, Ted.
As the one thing I was just in hearing her talk and just going through the whole issue of how the legal loop of, I guess, trapdoors or minefield that we run into in the profession. I always go back to people have this perception of architects being that arrogant person who knows it all and doesn't want to do stuff. But when you start looking at things like these issues about the legal ramifications of trying to practice and how you're going to practice, how you're going to organize, what state you can work in, you know, it's like that's really not arrogance. It comes from, you know, knowing what's going on and what's happening. And it's not so much architects' arrogance, it's the public's ignorance about what we do.
I think there would be a lot of people amazed. I mean, I was tonight just sitting here watching and listening to Patty, you know, as she rattles off, you know, in 23 states and, you know, 15 and this, that, and the other. And she obviously knows her stuff. I mean, she's got a business called licensure, right? Yeah. I mean, so obviously she would, but for all the conversations, it's Thursday now. This is the fourth day in a row we've had conversations revolving around business entities and licensures and ethics and some of these things. And just the sheer enormity of the number of variables and variations. And she obviously has a very good handle on it because that's what she does. But for an individual, a Christian or a Ken or Catherine or anybody to go, okay, how do I know these things? You know, Patty's in it all day, every day. And I, to your point, Ken, to say, you know, I can't do this because of this, or the whole thing is very scary. You know, just listening to it.
Yeah.
And not wanting to make a mistake, you know, in some of her cautionary tales. Doesn't make you feel any better, I don't think. And I don't think any of that was meant to be an advertisement for your attorney, right? I mean, it's just, this is the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Like I said, the work I've been doing now is architect of record for people that, you know, it makes it even more complicated. You know, you get the request, hey, can you just stamp this drawing for me? I'm like, whoa, we can't do that. That's illegal. Yeah. And then, you know, people are shocked to hear that that's something that's actually against the law to do.
Yeah, and that's a big deal. That's a big deal. And people still try to convince you to stamp it anyway. I don't know.
Right.
It's
and for $500, you
know? Right? Yeah.
Yeah, there have been a few big plan stamping cases. You know where I am over the years. You know, was it yesterday? It was yesterday. We talked about the Charlie Munger dorm at UCSB. Wow. and the one at Michigan as well. And, you know, we started talking about design, great tie into this conversation today. But yeah, my first job out of school, I worked for a firm in Chicago called Epstein. We did a lot of architecture work on big, you know, very prominent projects, Helmut Jahn's United Term, Chicago Museum, big, very high profile. And this sort of gives new appreciation for, you know, whoever was wrangling all of these things.
Yeah.
I mean, some of those architects, or I guess we can't even call them a design architect, according to what Patty was saying.
Technically, they can't be called architects. Yeah.
That's why I'm also interested in the label, because sure, I went to architecture school and I enjoyed it and I'm proud to be an architect and whatever, but I'm more than happy to give away that label if it allows me to do what I want to do. You know, helping other architects or so on. And I also wondered about all these people who are hiring remote help from other states and from other countries. How does that work?
Yeah. It's like the folks that hire the drafting help from overseas to, because they work very, very inexpensively. But they're, you know, and granted, a lot of them are trained in the United States. They're trained in the American system, but now they're working from, you know, across the ocean and what is a real experience? You know,
who's really doing the work? There are some advantages too with the different time zones. I mean, Scott Reynolds mentioned when he was working in Hong Kong, it was probably all American trained architects, but they were, you know, 12 hours apart. So when half the firm was working, the other half was sleeping. And, I suppose you move things a lot faster that way.
Well, I think it would be different if you were doing work in the other country where if someone's in Rome, for example, and I wouldn't be able to practice do projects in Rome just because I have someone there doing the drafting. But if she's doing my drafting, just drafting, and it's just a project,
I think that's a fundamental question. You know, I also think that gets to Christian's question about being licensed in New York and doing specs for somebody in California. And, you know, as Ken said, it's who's the architect of record? Who's the person stamping it that's taking responsibility? I think there's, and now I really wish we had asked the question that bluntly when we were talking to Patty, but it must come down to that, because someone in India or the Philippines or Rome or wherever they are that's doing the drafting work, according to some states, that's going to be providing architectural services, but I'm guessing they're not, probably California. But I'm guessing that they're not licensed in California. So I think there's a fundamental question out there.
If someone just tells me what to do and I just do it, am I being an architect? I mean, if I am an architect, I guess I'm always an architect, just doing what someone else tells me to do.
And where does drafting end and design begin?
Yeah.
You give a little freehand sketch to someone in Rome or in another state or whatever, and they start drawing it in Revit or AutoCAD or whatever, and then they start deciding where to put the windows and things like that. Is that drafting or is that design?
That's thinking too much for yourself, Christian. You just have to tell them where to put the window, and then they're just drafting.
Well, here's a concern. I had a project I was doing here, a facade renovation, and the owner wanted to get some renderings done, so they went online and got a designer from somewhere to put some drawings together for him of this facade. And this is where it made me realize that you really need to have a local architect working or involved in the project, because this person who did the drawing that they really liked obviously had never experienced snow or cold weather before, because, you know, what they were proposing to put on this building is like, you could never do that in Michigan, not in Detroit, and not on this street. So I think along with the subtleties that came out from the discussion about the subtleties and the licensing laws and how, you know, getting registered and licensed in different states has its subtle differences. Just practicing in different states has its subtle differences of that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's a really good point.
Right.
So it's just, different, even though it's all international building code, Illinois is different than Michigan's.
Mm. Yeah. Just being in Arizona recently, all the materials and issues that they have out there are totally different than the ones we've.
Yeah.
Well, I know we're headed and almost to the top of the hour here. We need to wrap this up. So why don't we, what's the maybe the one or two things that this conversation with Patty today has either inspired you or scared you into doing for your business in the next couple of days?
Christian, I feel like I need to contact her, and even though it kind of hurts my wallet, I think I have to give myself and my colleagues the same advice that we give homeowners. You know, it's hire a professional. Don't get advice from other people at Andrea Architects or from your CPA or your brother-in-law or whatever. Just, you know, get good advice from someone who really knows their stuff. And Patty mm-hmm. seems to be one of them.
Two things I would take away is number one, from her comments, it's complicated. And what we're doing is there's a lot of complexity to it. But at the same time, it does inspire me to want to encourage me to want to seek out the subtleties in getting licensed in another state. I do believe that's something I'm going to still be doing just now with, you know, maybe a little wider eyes open, more aware of the issues that are going to come up now. And like I say, Christian said, somebody who I probably should be talking to before we go much further.
Mm. How about you, Catherine?
Well, I was kind of wondering about me saying I'm an architect on my podcast, but I do say I'm from Massachusetts, and I was thinking, well, if I can do exempt work, that means I should be able to give people advice, and I should call my lawyer and ask him again, because I already asked him once, and I'm sure if I call him and ask him again, he's going to say, you want to pay me to have the same conversation we already had? Because I already told you that I wouldn't do that if I were you. So, but I do wonder about he said he thought it was probably okay for me to say I was an architect on my podcast because I'm not offering to design a...
offering services. But you could say you're an architect in Massachusetts, right?
I can't. Well, that's what I say. That's what I say. Yes. So I feel like that's not that misleading. I don't say like I'm America's architect. Imagine saying that. Oh man, there would be a lot of angry architects.
America's team.
Maybe we should be qualifying it now. It's not just I'm an architect, but I'm a Michigan architect, a New York architect. It's gotta have that qualifier on it. So
yeah. And I don't think you can casually tell someone in a bar you're an architect and if you're not in your home state.
I can't be George Costanza, use it to pick up chicks.
Not anymore.
I always wanted to pretend to be
only
an architect.
Only in Michigan.
Yeah. Well, they already had the lawsuit in New York that they named after him, after the character.
Yeah.
State of New York versus Vandalay Industries, which is one of the greatest cases of all time. Yeah, they just, that one wrapped up a couple of years ago now. Well, it was a great conversation with Patty. This is one of those weeks where I kind of walk away from this wondering how much clarity we actually found. I think that the clarity is in that we don't know what we don't know, and we better be careful. And maybe that's exactly the clarity that we need. But I like to come out with answers. You know, so we had this conversation. You know, we'll come full circle on this. We had this conversation with Zach 6 weeks or so ago. Mm-hmm. And we came out of that with a lot of questions, and which led to this conversation with Patty. And it sounds like we'll have another conversation with Patty down the road as well, which is good news, I think. But I guess that's the big takeaway, buddy, out there is we don't know what we don't know. So as Christian said, find a qualified professional that that does and get that, seek their advice, get that help. I've always been a little bit cavalier about being able to set up business entities and not typically professional architecture firm or something like that, but just go through the Secretary of State website. Oh, I can set that up. You know, it's just a form with $50 or whatever it is, but might think a little bit differently about that in the future. So good takeaways today. Well, for all of you out there that are listening into this, first of all, thank you. Thanks for listening in. Thanks for supporting Context and Clarity. We're glad that you're around here. Join us sometime for Context and Clarity Live, if you can. It's always a good conversation. We have these conversations every Thursday for Context and Clarity Live. You can find them on Facebook and Twitter and Twitch and YouTube. And our guest next week for Context and Clarity Live will be Diana Nicholas. She is a partner in SAM, I'm going to say it that way, SAAM Architecture. I'm really looking forward to this conversation next week because she, I'm going to say, is at the nexus of equitable practice and hybrid practice. And I think it's going to be a really interesting conversation on the heels of what we've been going through the last 18 or 19 months. And looking forward to what equitable practice means, what the effect of of remote practice, hybrid practice, employees or partners, consultants that you might have. So I'm looking forward to having that conversation with Diana next week. We'll do that at 4 p.m. Eastern inside the Entree Architect Community Facebook group, but also the Entree Architect YouTube channel, Twitch stream, my Twitter account. So at Jeff_Eccles, that's my social handle everywhere. And also on my LinkedIn profile. So join us in one of those places or listen to the podcast version wherever you consume podcasts. So for all of you out there, thank you for listening. Christian, thanks for being with us today. Great to have you here.
For inviting me.
Ken, really appreciate you being here as well. And,
my pleasure.
And Catherine, as always, thanks for keeping the wheels on the bus and moving in one general direction. Always fun to have you in the conversation as well. All right. Well, with that, everybody, again, appreciate you. Take care. Be well. Stay well. Stay safe. Keep those around you safe and well. Find a little bit of time to breathe and relax. We don't have to stress about this all the time. Find a little way to get rejuvenated because we're going to do this again. We said this earlier, Context and Clarity Live Tuesday will be our 400th Context and Clarity conversation, which is absolutely amazing to think about. We're going to just keep doing it. We're going to do it again tomorrow. So again, appreciate all of you, and I hope I see you somewhere sometime soon. Thanks, everybody. I want to say thank you to Infratech Outdoor Comfort Heating for their support of this episode of the Context and Clarity podcast. Visit infratechusa.com/podcast to sign up for a free consultation and learn why Infratech is the choice for bringing indoor comfort to outdoor living. All right, well, now you know what we thought and what we're going to do with what we learned. But what did you think? What did we miss? I really hope that there was some big takeaway from the Context and Clarity Live conversation or from our breakdown right here that will help you with your business. DM me on Instagram or on Twitter and let me know what your takeaways were. You can find me on all the socials at Jeff_Eccles. So send me a message and let me know what your takeaway was. And if you want more conversations like this, subscribe to the Context and Clarity podcast and leave us an honest review and rating. Those things really help us to get the message out and help us to help more architects just like you. Oh, and follow Context and Clarity on Instagram as well. There you can get a heads up on everything that's coming up. In our next episode, Catherine and I will host Context and Clarity Live again with a new special guest and a new theme for next week. There's always something new to look forward to. And if you love content like this, check out Gable Media. It's a multimedia network for people that care about the built environment. And it's also the home of Context and Clarity. With Gable's growing family of podcasts and video channels, I know you'll find something there that interests you. You can learn more at GableMedia.com. That's GABLMedia.com. And finally, if the topic of today's episode is of particular interest to you and you'd like to dig deeper into it, then join me over in the Entree Architect Community Facebook group. That's where every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern, I host Context and Clarity conversations, and we take topics just like this and we dig deeper. We have a conversation in real time to try to find more clarity around the things that matter most to you. So thanks for listening. I hope our time together has inspired you to think about your community and your practice and how you can support those around you. Catherine and I will be back for our next episode. And in the meantime, I hope you'll join me and the Entree Architect community on Facebook today at 4 p.m. Eastern so that we can help each other find more clarity around the topics that matter most, no matter what your context may be.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns. What's known in England is diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.